The College Game Day podcast is presented by Old Dominion Freight Line, helping the world keep promises.
We got a real simple plan. One man, one mission.
Georgia has won the national championship. Touchdown!
If you're a fan, you might think this is sports heaven.
This might be college football heaven.
This is ESPN's College Game Day podcast. Now alongside Pete Thamel is Reese Davis.
Giving new meaning to Smoky Mountains, there is a team that is closer than anyone else to the playoff now, and seasons were saved on a seismic Saturday. This is the College Game Day podcast for Monday, October 17th. Reese Davis and Pete Thamel on what was one of the wildest, most entertaining, most thrilling weekends of college football in recent memory. The Tennessee win over Alabama, TCU's rally against Oklahoma State, and then you finish it off with USC and Utah giving Lincoln Riley his first loss. But Pete, you have to start on Rocky Top, where that was just a game back and forth, a win for the ages for them, a coming of age. And I said right off the top, there's a team that is closer to the playoff than anyone else right now. And it is the Tennessee Volunteers, whether you're ranking them number one or not, which I'm not. I kept Ohio State there, and I have Tennessee number two. But Tennessee has the fewest obstacles and the most direct path to the playoff as we speak right now.
So you think they sail in if they lose in Athens and are 11-1?
I do. That's exactly my point. But look, barring a 49-7 loss or, you know, something unfortunate, like Hendon Hooker not being available for the postseason, which, you know, barring something unforeseen that you would never want to think about, I think just don't screw up any other game. Play your tails off. If you win in Athens, great. You go and try to win the SEC and get in that way. But, I mean, would you really, if you looked at them right now, road win at Pittsburgh, great win over Alabama, close loss against Georgia, running through the rest of the SEC, and some of those other wins might look pretty good. LSU all of a sudden didn't look so bad in Gainesville. To me, it'd be hard to keep them out because nobody else is really going to have that level of win. And if you like to measure tight losses, I'm not assuming they're going to lose in Athens. I'm just saying if. Sure. Who else is going to have a tougher tight loss than that?
No, very, very fair. As I spin through my creaky Rolodex of a mind and try to come up with one loss playoff participants who did not play in their conference title game, Ohio State with Urban Meyer that lost at Penn State on the block punt comes to mind. Nittany Lions win the Big Ten, don't get in. Penn State president starts clamming for the playoff expansion, which they then voted against. But that one scenario comes to my mind. Is that the only one, Reese? You're encyclopedic about this.
Alabama won the national championship in 2017 and didn't play in the SEC.
Didn't play in the SEC game. Okay. All right.
They they were kind of beat up on defense late in the year. They lost at Auburn. You know, Auburn then lost to Georgia in the rematch. Alabama got in over Ohio State in that fourth spot. And Alabama beat Clemson, and then that was the Tua walk-off year, too. So so it's happened. And, you know, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but I do want to say this again for the 500th time. Penn State should not have been in the playoff that year. They lost 49-10 to Michigan. You can't lose a game when every game is evaluated the way it is in the small field of the playoff. You can lose, but you can't lose by 1,000 like that. And they did, you know, so they won their Big Ten championship. Good for them. But that's old history. The new era here. We may well have some new blood, and it may well be Tennessee coming in the playoff. You know, I think the one thing that won't get reported on, there won't be big articles written about it, there won't be GoFundMe pages set up for it, but you and I made one of the great escapes in the history of college football at the end of the Alabama-Tennessee game. Now, understand something. We understand that we are blessed and privileged to be able to watch games from the press box or from the sidelines. So Pete and I are on the sidelines at the end of the Alabama-Tennessee game. We have a flight to catch, but we're not leaving this game, right? So Rachel, who is one of our exceptional staff members who gets us from point A to point B. I'd said to her, Rachel
Smith, a bulldog, no less.
She is a Georgia fan, and she knows ball, and she loves ball, and getting married soon. And we wish her the best. Why she's having a football season wedding, I'm not really sure, but I'm still hoping it goes well. but you know, we had talked to Rachel and said, when this clock hits zero, there is no time to lose because they're coming. They're going to tear down the goalpost. They're going to storm the field. The rest of the people are going to get out and start blocking traffic, and we've got no chance if we don't beat them. Ball sails through the uprights. Pete and I are Desmond Howard. Okay, that's exaggerated, but we're running as fast as we can for old, out-of-shape guys or old, moderate-shaped guys. Rachel sprinting in the car, boom, ahead of the field, no traffic, make our flight. It might, in my 8 years on game day, and I've had a few dandy escapes. Fu, who orchestrates all of this, got me out of Kyle Field after the double overtime game with Tennessee a few years ago, and that was at the top. But Rachel might have beaten him Saturday. That was a great one because basically they tore the place down right after we left. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It was pretty good.
So you used an interesting word.
You said sailed through the uprights. So we are 100 yards away, maybe even 120 yards away from where that ball went through the uprights. We happen to be on the opposite side. That's where we needed to get out of the stadium. I did not realize until I saw some highlights the next morning what a knuckleball that kick was. That kick wouldn't have got three if they were graded on style points.
Yeah.
That thing was like Tim Wakefield. Bzz, 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 bzz. And we were so far away, and just literally, I didn't look for a signal. I couldn't really see it from a sideline 120 yards away. We just listened. And that told you everything you need to know. And there were some great, I went down a little rabbit hole last night. There were some great like reaction videos that people posted of like the fans storming. And like, it was a decade and a half long catharsis, just all streamed out. And it was an amazing passion play that whole game. That is one of my favorite regular season games that I've ever covered. Cause you could just feel the angst. You could feel, credit Tennessee for not flinching, because you could feel it in the stands. You could feel the nervous tension. You could feel the, oh no, here we go again. As everything played out. So yeah, what a wild, awesome scene. It's so great for the sport to have old General Nealon Stadium rocking and rolling again, because that place was a snake pit. What a great electric environment. Just the fans were in early. They were on every play. They impacted the game, Reese, maybe as much as I can ever remember in a big top 10 game, an opposing stadium impacting the game. I would imagine if you went through the box score of those 17 Alabama penalties, you could chalk up at least a third of them to the crowd just gumming them up on false starts. You know, Bryce Young, I saw him trying to scream audibles, and I was like, what are you doing? There's no chance, you know, watching field level, that anybody can hear what you're saying.
Yeah, he ended up going up almost to individual linemen and getting it, making the adjustments and the checks. I would even say the crowd impacted the officials a few times, not in terms of when they threw flag. They lost count of the downs.
Yeah.
Once that everybody knew about, and another times when they did a little CYA and announced that they were doing something else, but they lost track of the downs. They lost track of the number of men on the field when they were down in that one really loud end when Alabama ended up burning a timeout because they were confused. You know, it was an intense atmosphere for everyone involved, players, fans, officials, broadcasters watching from the sidelines. It was an amazing environment. You know, that is the one thing. But before we go further, Weekend Review is brought to you by Eckrich Smoked Sausage. Find them in the refrigerated meat aisle at your favorite grocery store to create a one-of-a-kind sausage recipe. Eckrich, you do you.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app.
Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know, Pete, that was one of the things that, you know, I don't like to come on here and say, boy, what a great show we had on College Game Day on Saturday morning. So instead, I'm going to come on here and say, man, what a great show we had on College Game Day Saturday morning. And I'm not saying that other than to say everybody involved in it did a tremendous job of preparation. But there are certain moments over the course of the season where you capture everything you had hoped to going into an environment. I had a really good sense of what it was going to be like, having grown up around this rivalry, having a great number of friends who are, you know, dyed-in-the-wool, dedicated Tennessee people, knowing what that would mean to them to win that game.
And, we have one on staff, too.
Yeah, we have some on staff, too. And it was a we were able to capture that emotion. We were able to foreshadow what the aftermath of the game would be like by hearkening back to the 1982 game, which was very similar in circumstance in terms of Alabama's dynasty, you know, their legendary head coach, the frustration they had handed out Tennessee. The only difference in the two, well, there are two differences. One, Tennessee wasn't great that year, and they were basically just playing for the upset. And two, the World's Fair wasn't going on across the street as it was in 1982. But the catharsis, the tearing down the goalposts, the marching them from one end to the other, the throwing them in the river, everything, you know, if it was would have been 40 years to the day on Sunday. You do that, you have Peyton Manning come in and lead the band, which was another iconic moment when a long Tennessee losing streak to Alabama ended with Peyton Manning leading the band. We were able to capture that. Pat McAfee's backflip into the Tennessee River and almost
flip or almost, a flop.
Yeah. Well,
if you really watched the film.
Yeah. Yeah. But the other part was Josh Heupel came on with Herbie and me, broke down some X's and O's, and, you know, certainly without giving away game plan, talked about some of the things that ended up being extraordinarily problematic for Alabama and extraordinarily beneficial for Tennessee on the field in terms of the way they attacked.
Again, I've done the show for like 6 minutes, so I don't know anything about anything. I mean, Peyton Manning was unbelievable. Mm. Like just to have him there as a guest picker, you know, he was just fantastic. I got the sense. So I got to go over in the 10 o'clock hour of our show. I got to go over to SEC Nation to do some updates over there. So it was for me the rare time. That amid a show, I just got to see the environment. You know what I mean? Because it was probably like a half mile away, zipped over there on a golf cart, and you could first of all the set where we were when I pulled up. I think we were in the same car in the morning
we were,
at 6:30 in the morning. There were, the line was a half mile long to get into the game.
Easily.
Set. Yeah. So you were like, and it was. I remember pulling up, you know, pre-dawn a month ago, and I was like, this is unbelievable. There's thousands of people here already, and it was way more from that. So I think one of the great parts of covering college sports, Reese, is the longing that they're so interwoven through the identity of cities, states, towns, fan bases, so much more than professional sports, that the longing for these moments is different. So when there is a breakthrough, when there is a first, when there is, you know, finally getting back at a rival, or even being able to call them one at this point for Tennessee, when you do get those breakthroughs, they're just more meaningful because the sport's just woven so much deeper through the culture than it is. And this is not a criticism of NFL. People love their NFL teams and there's the Packers and all that stuff. But like, It was just personal for these folks to have that. And there's a couple things I'll always remember from that day. And it was a remarkable, memorable day. One is the the look on Bryce Young's face, because we happen to be standing on that. It's always easier to stand on the visiting sideline when you go to a game because there's less people. So it wasn't like we were rooting for Alabama. There's just less humans around and you're not in the way.
And it was also close to the room where we went in halftime. It was close to the cars
it just made sense. Yeah. So anyway, we happened to be standing where Bryce Young came, and it was middle of the third quarter, late third quarter. The thing's right in the throes. Bryce Young looked so calm. So calm. He was laughing, dapping up his linemen, joke. Like you could tell that moment was. And again, they didn't win. He completed three passes there, and they hung the field goal kicker out to dry a little bit. Probably should have run one there. We could talk about that more later. Yeah. But like, just the joy he had in that moment, I thought was really cool. Now Hendon Hooker obviously came out every bit of the 24-year-old bloodless assassin that he is, and ultimately got it done. But I'll just, when Bryce Young's obviously going to be in the American football consciousness for the next 10 years, hopefully 15, right? Like, I will never forget just how amid chaos, amid all the defensive busts, amid everything that was happening, all the penalties, he was just bopping around like it was, like a spring 7-on-7 at Matter Day, and they were going to go, all right, we got to go beat the, we got to go beat, Santa Margarita today or something like that. It was he just had a remarkable, remarkable way about him. So
he was brilliant, Pete. That game's a blowout without him. I mean, I've said for a while, and I don't even mean this, Tennessee did a good job, and some of it was Alabama's rush 3 drop 8. Will Anderson didn't have as big an impact on the game as he typically does. I've been saying for 2 years that Will Anderson's the best player in the sport. Bryce Young won the Heisman last year and deserved it. Will Anderson's still great. Bryce Young's the best player because he's carrying the team. That's not to say he'll win the Heisman. I don't think he's going to, and I don't necessarily think that he's having a Heisman season. I would have Hooker number one at the Heisman. Bryce Young's a magician, and that game is an ugly beatdown if he's average. I mean, if he's hurt and average, I'm not even talking about if, a backup plays. I'm talking about if he's not Bryce Young, then he kept him in that. It was a sensational performance by him to make it a thrill. I don't want to spend this whole time. I mean, it's worthy. I do want to hit one more thing. What's your reaction to the? I know it's in fun, and it's not totally serious because I mean they've been ready to pay the $100,000 fine to the SEC and pay the $20,000 or whatever it's going to cost to replace the goalpost for a long time. But Tennessee's doing this fun thing that you can donate, $16 for in honor of the ending of the streak. You can donate $52.49 in honor of the score. It sort of strikes me as like saying, hey, why doesn't everybody come over for a party? Everything's on me. Then after you have a great time on the way out the door, you say, hey, how about dropping a little in the change bucket to help us pay for this a little bit? There's a part of it that's funny and intense. Yeah. And there's a little part of it that seems a little like, why are you guys doing this? How about just asking for a donation in a different way in honor of it? But
I thought it was genius for two reasons. One, it is straight from the Danny White, we're going to hang a national championship at UCF banner, right? It is going to, your fans are going to love it. Your rivals are going to hate it, and people are going to talk about it for a long time. So I think from a marketing perspective, they had a historic win. They dominated one of the great days we've had in the sport in the last decade. They were the dominant story, and they said, you know what? We're going to flip this out there, and we're going to make sure Monday morning we're still the dominant story.
Wait a minute. I want Taylor and Sarah to mark this moment in podcast history because this is the moment – when Pete takes the nice approach and I'm the cynic and, hey, you're playing on people's emotions. You're taking the everyday Tennessee fan at the height of his revelry. And you say, let me sneak in that pocketbook for $52.49 if I can.
Yes, we've officially traded places. That is a wonderful observation. I'm now going to go mutter to myself and swear a bunch this morning because I've clearly gone soft. I just thought that
it was sort of a genius, like Danny White marketing move, because like three quarters of the country is going to hate it. It was like when he hung a national championship banner at UCF, and they got more airtime on the Paul Feinbaum show at UCF for declaring a national championship than pretty much anyone other than Alabama. Like, it was unbelievable how divisive that came. So you can save $100,000 from the bottom line. You can give all the people that were there in that marvelous environment, you could give them a sense of like, okay, I own 1/198,000th of that goalpost. Like, that's, I own a fleck fair. Of that yeah. paint. Yeah. So like, if you're a sophomore and you give your Wednesday beer money in order to give the $16 to that, like you can own some little part of the field, and you can feel like you were part of it. So I actually checked this morning. So we're taping this on Monday morning. I was surprised it wasn't done. It was only about halfway filled. Now I'm sure by the end of the week they'll fill it up. But I thought that thing people would be fighting
yeah,
to give money
yeah.
for that.
It's you mentioned earlier the experience and the connection that you have. I have a friend who is the dean of an engineering college in Indiana, a man called Earl Brooks. And Dr. Brooks made the great mistake of bestowing a doctorate upon me once for speaking at their commencement ceremonies. And he is a huge Tennessee fan. And oh, wow. I wouldn't be surprised if he donated, because he was at the side of our set. I invited him in, or he had reached out to me, and I'd invited him to come see the show. Complete university president. Now, not even the University of Tennessee president, in a Hendon Hooker jersey. he was ready to go, man. He was. And so they had a great day. So he might have been one of those that would like to own a little fleck of that goalpost too. That is a good point, to be able to say, I have a little piece of that in a way that's a little bit more than a memory, I guess. But it still reminds me of the John Mulaney bit. Are you a fan of John Mulaney, the comedian?
I don't.
Brilliant comedian. He does this whole bit about how when you get out of college, they call you all the time.
And, oh,
hello, John. This is college. Give us your money. So I always think of that whenever the various schools with which me or my family have been associated with call us and want money. And then, hello, this is college. We want your money.
I wonder if Gene Wojciechowski, our colleague, former Vol walk-on, and he did send a very classy video to you, Reese, on Saturday night of him smoking a cigar. It was not overwrought. But the point was, he felt good about it. So I felt good for Gene, who has sort of, the last time we were in Knoxville, had said to me that he's miserable to, he likes Tennessee so much, he's miserable to watch their games with, because he paces and occasionally curses. And, you know, Gene looks at the world through maybe a darker prism than I do, quite frankly, which is, there's not a whole lot of UV perspective. So I was happy to see him. That's what these games do. They create such cool moments. You mentioned the show. Hendon Hooker's parents came over to the show. Mr. Hooker was Alan Hooker was a great quarterback at NC Central. Met Peyton Manning, and they chatted a little bit. Hendon had gone to the Manning Academy. Peyton had said, it was just like one of those moments where you're like, that's pretty cool. You know what I mean? These two generations kind of colliding, Peyton giving some advice to the Hookers about how to handle the draft. It was just like really, really neat. Like, you get all those, like those epic days are just a collection of those small moments. And that sort of puts them in the mosaic of what makes everything about this sport so great.
Knoxville is where we were, but a different set of circumstances. Say, perhaps had Utah beaten UCLA last week, we might well have been in Salt Lake City for the USC-Utah game on Saturday night. That was really emotional, too, and showed connection of community and campus and team and fans and the sport in general, as Utah honored Ty Jordan and Aaron Lowe, the two Utes who were tragically killed in separate incidents, grew up as boyhood friends. We showed on College Game Day Saturday morning the hand-painted helmets with their likenesses on them that Utah wore, along with the black jerseys, and what was a frenzied atmosphere in Rice-Eccles Stadium. And their fans, too, poured out onto the field. And in the aftermath, you could hear the emotion from Kyle Whittingham that sort of transcended winning a big game and keeping their season from being probably almost certainly disappointment coming off a Pac-12 championship last year. They kept their hopes of making the conference championship game alive, but it was much more than that. The emotion was not found necessarily in what that victory meant to the season. And that was another moment of why that described, I think, Pete, why college football is different from everything else. That type of community and connection you just don't find with any other thing. Really, I don't know if you find it with anything else truly in American life.
Yeah. No, I had the fortune of the last leg of my journey back from Knoxville driving and getting to listen to dueling radio teams from USC and from Utah as that game ended. And what a fantastic game. And in the Utah booth, when they won, I mean, it sounded like a fraternity party. I mean, it was awesome. They were just so excited and so overwrought at that moment for them. And yeah, you saw the emotion. I mean, you heard in Lincoln Riley's comments after the game. I mean, there was definitely, you know, he was pretty blunt and pretty critical of the officials. I'm sure that made its way to Merton Hanks's desk at the Pac-12 on Monday morning. But just those cauldrons of emotion, and that's really what they are. And there were different kinds of emotions, completely different in Utah on Saturday night than it was in Knoxville on Saturday night. That's really what makes the sport unique. And I think our listeners who aren't in the Mountain Time Zone would probably be surprised. Utah, Reese, is one of the great environments when it's full.
It's awesome.
It is awesome. Yeah. I mean, they care so much there. It's a little band box, little bit like Eugene, right? Like, I think Eugene is one of my five favorite stadiums to see a game where we're going this weekend. And it's because it is a boutique hotel and not a, you know, not a big city Marriott like a lot of these stadiums. And so, yeah, but I think for Utah, boy, what a moment for Cam Rising, right? The kid who kind of bounced around and has really found the right home and the right program and the right system. And for Utah to out USC, I thought if Utah was going to win that game, they would win it, you know, 31-28. They would win it in the trenches. And no, they just out-dueled them, which was really a surprising part.
Sonny Dykes fade, I thought, was underway with the way the Oklahoma State TCU game started. And another outpouring of emotion as the Sonny Dykes era has gotten off to a tremendous start. And rallying for a double overtime victory against Oklahoma State, the game you had to, you know, not going to pretend to have watched that from start to finish yet, just seen highlights because we were at Alabama, Tennessee. But, you know, and keeping up with that and watching some of it during halftime, I thought the Cowboys had kind of established a stranglehold on that game. And then it turns out they didn't. And now all of a sudden TCU's a player in this thing as we turn the corner in October.
Yeah, you can't ignore TCU and, you know, in the playoff talk anymore. It's just that simple. They have earned a seat at the table, and it's been very impressive to see how they've done it, to really see a program, you know, transform and flip identities in such a short period of time. Now, they had always sort of attempted to have some wide open offenses as Gary Patterson kind of sputtered through their final years, but I think their identity is pretty crisp and pretty clear now. And you're talking about a program that this wasn't even the starter they intended to have when the season started. They were going to roll with Chandler Morris, and good on Max Duggan. I do think there's a lot of these quarterbacks we're going to see in these showcase games in the next week or so. And really, when you go throughout the sport and who's been successful, for every Bryce Young who kind of rolled in as an All-American and let it rip, there's guys who transferred like Hendon Hooker. There's guys who went through struggles in 3-win seasons like DTR did. You look obviously at Bo Nix, you know, who was hailed as a savior and went through some significant struggles at Auburn, who quietly after Oregon laid that dinosaur egg in the opener, has really put together a fantastic season and is really sort of living up to his potential. You know, I think in our jobs, we can't obviously root for people, but we want to see great players live up to, you know, what they're supposed to be. So you feel good about Bo Nix, but it's a little bit of a testament in this, you know, era where transferring's easy and NIL money can lure you away to overcoming adversity and developing. I think at that position is really one of the key things that can get lost when you're given five stars and everyone just expects you to roll in and start ripping it.
Maybe we'll talk more about this later on in the week, but I do want to touch on it now, just in case. We stream of consciousness sometimes on this podcast, and I do want to talk about Penn State, Michigan, but you bring up Bo Nix, and I'm really hoping to get the opportunity to visit with him a little bit when I go out there, because I've got tremendous respect for him. I think I've got a good feel for how he grew up in terms of some of the things that we're talking about this morning, this visceral connection that you have with the sport. Little Orange and Blue Tigers course through his veins. He's an Auburn man through and through. His dad was a great player there. He grew up in an Auburn family. There are photographs of him as a little kid, pictures with Cam Newton and Pat Sullivan, you know, and all Bo Jackson, all of the legends from Auburn. I just wonder how this is for him, how it really is for him, because this was a bit of a business decision, I'm sure. How has this impacted him as a player in terms of managing emotions at the quarterback position, in terms of not feeling like everything's on you? Maybe he never felt that way at Auburn. That's just my perception sometimes, that the weight of the world of carrying this place, this program, this football team that he had loved since, you know, basically since birth, that there was this tremendous weight to save them, you know, every time when things would go sideways. And I'm really fascinated by what it's like for him across the country, what it's like for him not having that connection and yet playing as well as he's playing right now, and an opportunity for a great stage for him this weekend, you know, against UCLA, an unbeaten team, a chance to really put Oregon in great shape in terms of making it to the Pac-12 championship game. And I mean, that 49-3 game is going to be an albatross. There's no question about it. But if, you know, maybe if things got really hairy in November, maybe they could work themselves into the playoff discussion should they win the Pac-12. They'd have to win the whole thing. I think he's one of the fascinating stories of the season as well. And I hope I get to visit with him a little bit when we get out there. And if not, I'm certainly looking forward to watching him play, because I think it's been a great comeback story for him at Oregon.
There's no question. And just to tease you, I had asked you earlier in the year on the podcast, I said, can Oregon make the college football playoff after week one? And you said, absolutely not. You can't with a blowout. And I think you referenced that Penn State, Michigan blowout from earlier in the year. So wouldn't it be fascinating if the two teams sitting around 4 or 5 are a one loss Oregon, who lost their only game out of league and is a conference champion, versus maybe Tennessee, who could have one loss. And again, I don't want to go into like endless mind bending scenarios of that stuff, but that one would be intriguing. I'm just going to leave that right there. That one would be intriguing with a head to head. Now, I don't think Tennessee would lose to Georgia in the same way, but you also have to give Oregon. I'm glad we're going to be there this week, and I'm glad we're going to give them the spotlight, because I think you just can't put teams in a box. And I think everyone would put Oregon in a 49-7 box or 49-3 box or whatever awful box that they put themselves in the Georgia Dome that day. And teams grow, teams evolve. Dan Lanning's a much better coach than he was in week one. Bo Nix is much more settled in Kenny Dillingham's system than he was then. They're starting to find an identity. They brought in a bunch of coaches, you know, quite frankly, from the NFL in different plate. Like, it just takes a little time to adjust sometimes.
Yeah. Before we move on, there's one quick thing I want to mention. The NBA is back. Get ready for the season to tip off with The Low Post. Zach Lowe talking basketball with the smartest people in the business. Now, twice a week, follow The Low Post wherever you're listening to this podcast. You know who's in a little bit of a different box now that they've played somebody and put a smackdown on them? Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really, I know the score was close for a while, but in watching that game, they were dominant to me. I thought they looked really good, and they're continuing to grow. They certainly need more accurate downfield passing from JJ McCarthy, but I think you're going to continue to see improvement in that as he goes along and plays more, to your point about needing more time. But that game got a little testy also because of some social media banter leading up to the game. And there was some back and forth going into the halftime tunnel, which is a recipe for that at Michigan anyway, the way they leave the field. So in similar areas. So I thought that was another takeaway from the weekend, is that Michigan is not just a product of its schedule. Their schedule has been soft. Non-conference schedule was marshmallow soft, and that's probably an insult to marshmallows. But they Penn State, for whatever you think of them, is a legitimate solid team, and Michigan dominated them, and Michigan's in it for the long haul, I think. And obviously they go to Columbus, but I think they'll arrive there with a zero in the loss column, and we'll see what happens then.
Yeah, I very poorly picked Penn State in this game, most based on that their run defense, I believe, was fifth in the country, and I thought they could get Michigan out of sorts a little bit by manning up and stopping the run. They did not stop the run. They had no chance stopping the run. And they just simply got, bowled over by a superior team. And I do think when we look at how Michigan has changed the course of the program from the COVID year, when I believe they were 2-4 and Rutgers had two shots to beat them, to where they are now, the real transformation has started at that offensive line. They have really established significant dominance there, and that overcame some good but not elite quarterback play last year. And now you combine that run game with a little more downfield dynamism, a very solid receiver group, and all of a sudden, Michigan defensive line, I still have concerns there. But offensive line, I don't think Michigan is against a high-end SEC team in the same way they did last year. And look, that offensive line won the Joe Moore Award last year. They weren't bad, but I feel like they have taken steps forward, and being able to push like that is really going to only going to help them.
I think maybe we got a little skewed with Michigan's offensive line. Said, see, they weren't that good, even though they won the Joe Moore Award when they got manhandled Georgia in the playoff. Well, let's not forget that was not really a college defensive line that we're facing. They basically stepped into the NFL. And, I don't know that there are any defensive lines, even in the SEC. They're good ones, but I'm not even sure Georgia's at full strength. In fact, I won't even say I'm not sure. It's not. They're good. They're really good. They're tough. It'd be hard to handle, but not what last year was. I don't think anybody has that this year in terms of that can completely overwhelm anybody. What's your biggest takeaway from this weekend?
Oh, my biggest takeaway from this weekend. Well, it's hard. We're biased by what we see, right? So I think the visceral feeling left in your chest from that environment that we obviously saw in Knoxville probably is my, that's where any conversation would have to start, right? But in terms of like bigger takeaway from the weekend, it's a good question. Yeah, I think like we knew Tennessee was good, right? We knew that they had been transformed under Josh Heupel. It still sounds weird to talk about them in the playoff. Like I don't think we really consider that viable. And this is kind of one of those wins that could change everything. I guess I'll give you this, Reese, because we chatted about this a little bit on the sideline. And you mentioned Bryce Young earlier. Is Alabama a little bit vulnerable in the post Bryce Young era? Because I think he's covering up for a lot of sins. I just think he was so dynamic, moved the ball so well. You lose next year, him, Gibbs, and Anderson. And again, Alabama has lost and replenished at a very rapid rate. But there's also some holes there. I think you're going to end up seeing some staff changes at Alabama, people moving on or moving out. I just think like there's a taste of mortality there that we maybe haven't seen much there in the last decade. And again, writing off Nick Saban, writing off Alabama is foolish. There's gigabytes of wasted internet ink about they lost to Ole Miss and they lost to Hugh Freeze and their dynasty's dead and da 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 da. But I'd be curious, like, what you think the state of the union of Alabama is right now. We saw them look pretty mortal in two road games this year. Mm-hmm.
I have openly mocked and chastised a number of our colleagues in the media who stupidly raced to their computers or their microphones to declare the dynasty dead every time they lost a game, because it was just that. That was the ultimate dumb loses more than smart wins. And it was the idea. It was the idea. I'm going to be the first to say it so that I can say, hey, look, dumb ways to die. This is a real vulnerability that needs to be fixed. I'm not saying the dynasty's dead or over, they can't do it, but they have, as opposed to earlier when they just maybe had bad games, you know, the Ole Miss game comes to mind where everybody declared it over in 2015. They turned the ball over five times, had a ball bounce off a guy's helmet and go for an Ole Miss touchdown. You know, there's always been the weird things in those games. These are self-inflicted right now. 15 penalties against Texas, 17 penalties against Tennessee. They don't play the ball well in the air on the corners. They didn't get creative enough to use their pass rushers to apply any significant heat to Hendon Hooker because, you know, it felt like to me at times that they were worried about Hendon Hooker scrambling. Well, sure, yeah, 16-yard quarterback scrambles to move the chains, that'll hurt you. So will 76-yard touchdown passes. You know, so, you know, they have some things that need addressed, and addressing them without those guys you mentioned will be difficult. So I'm not declaring it over, but I do think it's a valid observation right now to say that there are some insufficiencies and weaknesses that have not been present in earlier iterations of, oh, my goodness, you know, Alabama may be vulnerable. Now, they are vulnerable, much of it self-inflicted. And the question now becomes is, can they fix it, or is this just who they are? You know, or is this, they are just, are they just an undisciplined, sloppy team that makes up for it through virtuoso performances from their quarterback and often from their two or three pass rushing defensive linemen or linebackers in Anderson, Turner, and Braswell? So I do think that there's some vulnerability there. My big takeaway from the weekend is what I said off the top. The closest team to the playoff right now, the most direct path, is Tennessee. And Tennessee has a bye week, which is perfect for them. Not really. They play UT Martin, but that's perfect. You go in, you play, you get over this whole Alabama thing. Kentucky's at home. Kentucky doesn't have the offense to beat them. There's no way that happens. Then
Cedric Tillman is probably back for that game, by the way.
Yeah.
And the fact that Tennessee has done all this without the guy who's by far their best receiver going into the year. I believe he's the leading receiver in the SEC. Sorry to cut you off. But I do think, like, if you're new to Tennessee and you're judging their calculus, that's a huge factor in the Tennessee calculus.
Yeah. And you know what? They've done okay because they threw the ball six times to one guy on Saturday, and he scored five touchdowns. Jalen Hyatt. So we should have mentioned that off the top.
Yes.
As great as Hendon Hooker was, and he was phenomenal. Desmond and you and I were sitting on the sidelines, and we were just like putting up, he's got four touchdowns. He got five catches, four touchdowns. Now it's six catches and five touchdowns. He was amazing. And, you know, so they've got him. They've got Brew McCoy. They're decent at the running back position. It balances them out nicely. Hendon can run it. Anyway, back to the point. It's what we said at the beginning, the Georgia game and then Missouri, South Carolina, Vanderbilt. I mean, you know, really they're closest. It doesn't mean they're locked, but, you know, it's hard to envision a scenario where they're not sitting right there on selection day, whether as SEC champion, SEC runner-up, or as a one loss, only loss being on the road to Georgia, at large bid. They have the most direct path. They are closest right now. That's my big takeaway from the weekend.
It's a great takeaway. And I apologize for cutting you off on that Tillman point. That it just sort of popped in my head.
That's what we do.
Head.
We have conversation. We're talkative and undisciplined here. Yeah. That's what we do.
We are definitely undisciplined. also undisciplined was Alabama's defense, which left DeMarco Helms just completely exposed. And give Alex Golish, the play caller for Tennessee, a ton of credit because they found him. They found number two over and over and over on Saturday. And the fact that Alabama did not adjust to that, they did not put in extra corners. Helms is a safety and he's just not great in coverage. And that certainly he could have played better, but I think some of that goes on the coaching staff at Alabama, as does not running the ball when they got down to the 30-ish. And if for no other reason
then Gibbs could have made a 50-yard field goal, a 46-yard field goal. Also would not have get Tennessee those precious seconds to pop it back 40 yards and kick their field goal. So yeah, that was a mistake. You know, people make fun of the analytic guys with a binder. But one of those analytic guys with a binder would have said, hey, you know, don't give them, like, eliminate losing from the equation
right
before you go win. And that play calling sequence did not eliminate losing from the situation, and they lost.
Oh, and the one other play on that too is Gibbs sort of stumbled on a little angle route that he ran and then didn't make the catch. If he catches the ball, he probably scores. And if not, it's an extra point length field goal. But to your point, he didn't catch it and the clock stopped and it left time there. And there could be a number of dumb loses more than smart wins moments from this week. And you know, we've talked exhaustively about Alabama, Tennessee. So I don't want to pick on Quandarius Robinson, who sort of inexplicably touched that Tennessee punt and gave him the ball back. And, you know, everybody saw Nick flip out on the sidelines. I have no idea what he was thinking, but
the internet thanks him because that gift will last a long, long
time. Yeah. 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 It will for a really long time. But the dumb loses your paycheck more than smart wins, at least temporarily, has to come from way off the radar and Fresno State, San Jose State game. Fresno State and assistant coach up in the booth get angry after San Jose scored a touchdown and he punches the glass and the glass breaks. And unfortunately people were hurt below, you know, had to be taken to the hospital, some cuts and so forth. And they've placed him on leave. At the very least, being dumb and not controlling your emotions cost you your paycheck, maybe for a while, maybe he's going to have to look for a new place. Who knows? But all of this, dumb loses more than smart wins, and it's all of all people. It's all Ken Dorsey's fault. Coordinator from the Bills who flipped out in the booth. He didn't punch the glass. He's beating up his playbook. Of all people, by the way, the unflappable Ken Dorsey of Miami Hurricane fame. And now these assistant coaches, they always look up to their role models in the pros. So now they're going to start punching glass and stuff in stadiums and injuring fans. Don't be dumb. Be a grown-up. You know, I mean, give yourself an ulcer on the inside and grind like the rest of us and stop, you know, showing somebody come make me feel better because my team did something I didn't like. You know, just scream. Don't hit stuff and put other people in danger. So dumb loses your paycheck, at least for a while, hopefully not longer. I don't wish him ill. He's not been identified. You probably know because nothing gets past the authority. But dumb loses your paycheck more than smart wins it because he didn't have the right defensive call in or something.
Yeah, that's we'll let random Bulldog assistant remain nameless for now. But that's unfortunate. Now, when I watch the Dorsey clip, I'm going soft here. So when I watch the Dorsey clip, I actually watch it with a ton of empathy because you're like, these guys work 90 hours a week. They put everything in. And then like those final, like you have everything set and those final seconds slip away and like, you know, sleeping 4 hours a night, go all the stuff these guys do. These football coaches work incredibly hard. Just ask them. They'd be happy to tell you about
it. Yeah. They'll tell you. Wait till Teddy plays for some of these guys. Your perspective on them will change.
That's fair. That's very, very. Teddy ain't playing for a glass puncher. I'll tell you that.
Oh, man. We appreciate you listening. What a great weekend on Rocky Top. We've been there twice, and the second trip outdid the first. Tremendous fans. It's great to have them back in the mix in the upper echelon of college football. And we are turning the corner. So a couple weeks away from the first rankings coming out. And we'll turn the page on Wednesday and start looking ahead to the weekend's games, which certainly unlikely to live up to what we saw this past weekend. But still, the games get of greater importance as we go along. College Game Day on its way to Oregon for the Chip Kelly reunion tour again as he goes back to Optum Stadium. We'll talk about that extensively on Wednesday. We encourage you to download this podcast wherever it is that you get your podcast and prefer to do it. For Pete, I'm Reese. Taylor and Sarah, they're wonderful. They put this thing together for us. See you on Wednesday.